Hello and welcome to the Ship Energy Podcast. This is Mark Williams broadcasting to you from Cambridgeshire in the UK. The first thing to say is Happy New Year to everybody out there. Let's hope 2024 is less tumultuous than 2023 was. I wish everybody peace and prosperity for the year to come. To start our series of podcasts this year, my first interview is with Hans Henning Udeck, the President and CEO of JE Access Limited. Hans is a German by birth, but he's spent the last four decades or more living in Japan and working in Asia, particularly around trade and technology transfer. For the last 15 years, he's mainly engaged in developing projects for renewable energy, in projects spread across Asia, India, and Africa. As president of JE Access Limited, he leads the development of a marine biofuel called Cambio, with partners from the Americas, Europe, and Asia. And in this interview, we'll hear about the development of that product and his hopes for its future. So Hans, welcome to the show. Great to have you on.
Yeah. Hi, Mark. I'm happy to be here.
So all the way from Japan. So with the time difference, it's quite late in your day. So we appreciate you taking the time, especially at this time of year as well.
It's always challenging being in Japan. Yeah.
One of my favorite things is to be on the west coast of North America. And quite late in the evening, you can phone Japan and say, how is it tomorrow?
Exactly.
You can speak to people in the future.
Yeah. I'm sometimes joking. I'm calling people and say, I'm calling from the future.
Well, I can tell you things are just as they were here in the past. So just as you remember them. But listeners will have noticed already that you are not a native Japanese. So perhaps the first thing to do is to ask you to introduce yourself and your organization.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, my name is Hans Henning Udeck. I'm, a cosmopolitan of German ancestry. I've been living for more than half of my life here in Japan, but I'm all over the place in Asia. I'm operating JE Access Limited, a company in Yokohama, which is in the process of establishing Cambio Fuels with multiple partners around the world. Cambio Fuels is currently not yet legally established as a company, but it is more or less a working title of a cooperation between multiple organizations in Asia, the US, and Europe. It is in the future planned to be housed as a corporation under the roof of my holding company, Next Generation, in Singapore. In principle, the motor and kingpin of the organization, and currently involved are in the US my partners and friends of Ver Divisions LLC, Shiva Venkat and Phil Boland. Shiva, the CEO, hails from Mauritius and he's a resident in Brooklyn, New York. Currently, he is in the Caribbean on Martinique and is evaluating the possibility of decontaminating the soil of the island, which is poisoned by chlordecone. This is a cancer-causing pesticide used in the 1970s that is not decomposing, and 95% of the people have it in their body, and it's cancerous, so it's terrible. We are considering phytoremediation. That means decontaminating the soil with plants using a specially trained, fast-growing elephant grass hybrid that we want to use then later in our plant to convert it into marine gas oil and biobitumen. With Ver Divisions, we are also trying to convince the sugar farmers in Florida and Louisiana that it is not a good idea to burn sugarcane trash and waste around about $300 million per year opportunity for converting that material into marine gas oil for the cruise ships in Miami and Fort Lauderdale. And also there are a lot of box ships and so on. So there is a lot of market in Florida. It sounds in principle like a no-brainer, but the farmers are very conservative. They have, but on the other hand, they have now slowly started to move. So we will see over the next couple of months or years, who knows.
Well, I suppose it's financial incentives will encourage them in the end if there's tax breaks for...
I thought so, but it's not, no, it's not really happening that way. So we started the conversation about 1.5 years ago with them, and we calculated what they could make out of it, and they just don't want to move. But it looks now that there is enough public pressure so that they have start to think. Yeah. So in Europe, we are working with WasteX Oil. This is the company of my partner and friend since 2007, Michael Richter. He is an engineer and builds currently plants for oil sludge and bilge oil recycling to much sought after chemicals. And he has also an AdBlue production facility for diesel exhaust fluid for NOx removal. So he will, with his staff and some partners, update the design of the plants for the new design and initially also manufacture them. The vessels and tanks are very bulky, so it doesn't make much sense to ship air with a little bit metal around it. So we will later produce them under license directly in the target markets. So that was in short what we are doing. We are working in India with partners in the Punjab state. The company is called Farm to Energy, and we are planning a plant for processing some of the 23 million tons of rice paddy, which is incinerated in the fields every year, and converting it into marine gas oil. That's our current structure.
The Cambio fuel you mentioned, please tell us more about that. Is that a renewable fuel? It's a biofuel, is it?
So what can I tell you about it? The chemical basics were established in the 1980s by a German professor. The patent ran out in 2005, and since then, partners of mine started to develop the predecessor of the current system. And we worked from 2005 to 2010 with the system. You know, the difficult part of this process is of the production is caused by the second law of thermodynamics, which means hot is always transferred to cold, not the other way around. Yeah. And so if you want to reach the required reaction temperature of 280 to 320 degrees, and you have a boiler type, then you would have to heat the boiler walls to some 400 degrees centigrade, and that would carbonize the feedstock at the walls. So that in turn would act as an insulation and contaminating the product. And so that has to be prevented. We never ever thought about a boiler type of approach. We resolved the problem partly with a friction pump. That means a pump that creates internal friction and is heating the surrounding medium. But that was too inefficient and also for commercial volumes and also very sensitive. So, however, it was in so far successful as the process produced light oil that was from the tap close enough to EN590 or ASTM D975 road diesel to power a small diesel generator for days, as well as a common rail BMW. I personally drove a Mercedes microbus 450 kilometers from Dresden to Frankfurt Airport, and without a hitch, went wonderful. What we also could show with C14 carbon dating, that the diesel came from young carbon, so to speak, which means the biomass. So there was no fossil carbon in it. Yeah. So that was very important to show. So we were against continuing the use of the pump, and so we separated from our initial partner and started from 2010 to 2013 our own tests with a high-speed heat exchanger using liquid metal. That works well, but even better was a microwave device, but only in bench test size. So when we started to look for commercial products, we found out that there are no commercially microwave devices available to upscale the production to commercial volume. And so in the end, we had to shelf the product in 2013. However, in the microwave device was were, my devices were developed in the meantime for the chemical industry and have been since 2020 in industrial size commercially available. We can buy it. In our discussions with the manufacturer, we learned that the microwave system is 1,000% more efficient than the friction pump. That had a temperature increase of 3 degrees centigrade, while we have basically no limit with a microwave, but we can easily utilize 50 degrees centigrade temperature increase. And the wonderful part is that it's very precise, so we can keep the temperature in a range of plus minus 2 degrees centigrade, which allows us to fine-tune the process and find the sweet spot of the reaction. So now we have taken up about a year and a half ago the thread and restarted our efforts. So one interesting aspect is that the process cannot crack the tough lignin in the biomass. The lignin carbonizes and comes out as let's call it a pasteous biochar or a biobitumen. Used in the asphalt of roads for the road coverage, this material is permanently storing carbon and is per ton of biobitumen sequestering 1.5 tons of CO2. This creates VCUs, or verified carbon units, which are certificates for actually stored carbon and have become recently very, very popular. So in total, the life cycle assessment becomes carbon negative or climate positive. A ship, truck, or diesel power plant using cambio fuel will therefore emit less CO2 than has been stored in the biomass. So that is a very big plus. That means our system is considered a carbon dioxide remover. So that is a feature that none of the e-fuels can offer.
Interesting. What sort of volumes are you able to produce, or what sort of volumes do you think are able to be produced?
Yeah, a volume. So the tricky part is the biomass. Yeah, biomass has not a high energy content, so you cannot transport biomass over long distances. So we have to stay within a radius of about 50 kilometers. Beyond that, the energy balance becomes negative, and we don't want to do that because it counts in the LCA. And so we produce our plants modular. That means in sizes of 4,000 tons of fuel oil per annum, and can daisy chain them. So that means different from other approaches that are always looking for the economy of scale. We are not bound by the economy of scale. We look at the availability of the feedstock and then adapt the plant size to the feedstock availability. Yeah. So in
it's principle, like you're building them in series rather than in a sort of vertical output.
Yeah. We produce fuel decentralized. Yeah. You see, biomass is difficult to transport, but fuel is not. It's done every day. Yeah, and with a tank lorry or with a rail car or with a barge, it's easy to transport because it's compacted energy.
Of course, yeah. So the limits to production of this fuel are really about the access to the biomass.
Yes, and there I can tell you that worldwide, 10.5 billion tons of crop waste are every year incinerated in the fields. This creates a lot of environmental problems. Yeah, the CO2 is carbon neutral, so that doesn't disturb the natural carbon circuit, but the energy is wasted. Yeah, it goes up into the air, and that is not very good. But on top of that, about 10 billion tons of carbon monoxide, methane, dioxins, and furans are produced, which are harmful and greenhouse gases. So if we can prevent this incineration in the fields, we have already avoided a lot of emissions. That's one thing. But 10.5 billion tons would be enough to produce about 3 billion tons of fuel oil. And if you know how much the shipping industry consumes, which is about 300 million tons, 10% of that, so we could cover 10 marine industries with that kind of fuel oil. So there is really no limitation. And that is not even covering crop waste that is not incinerated. And we can also, on fallow land, we can produce biomass ourselves. That's the other possibility. What we want to avoid, because then you have the problem with land use change and things like that.
But yes, but there is sufficient biomass from farm waste to produce carbon negative fuel to supply the entire shipping industry with this carbon sequestering byproduct that can be used for roads. Is this why, therefore, Hans, you talk sometimes about, I've heard you talk about why shipping should think about defossilization rather than decarbonization?
Yeah, I don't really like the word decarbonization, because carbon itself, carbon and CO2 are not enemies of humankind. Yeah, you know, this is not the case. They are just natural substances and very necessary. Our bodies are 17% carbon, give and take. Some have more, some have a little bit more fat. Anyway, we human beings are also exhaling, the whole mankind are exhaling 3 billion tons of carbon dioxide annually. But the carbon we exhale is the same carbon that was inhaled from the atmosphere by the plants. And so the hydrocarbons we consume, there is a natural balance in the carbon cycle. The only way to add to the carbon in the atmosphere is to take it from a sequestered source like fossil fuels. So it was safely stored from the atmosphere for millions of years, and then we come and combust it. And we are the problem, not the carbon. Yeah? So what we are trying to attempt with Cambio Fuels is bringing the shipping industry back into the natural cycle. That sounds very ambitious, but it's very possible. Yeah, as I already explained, we have this 10.5 billion tons that are field incinerated. Yeah, and so the yearly crude oil production is about 80 billion barrels. Yeah, and with the production from the crop incinerated crop waste, we could approximately replace 25% of the fossil fuels. Yeah, and that is not even considering crop waste that is not incinerated. So it can make a big dent.
Do you think it's more economic in the long run to create fuels like the one you're working on, like Cambio, than for shipping to re-engineer the entire industry to run on things like methanol or ammonia, or, you know, hydrogen-based fuels?
Yeah, okay. Hydrogen, that means let's talk about methanol and ammonia, because hydrogen itself is not really feasible because the low temperature it has to be stored, and the handling is so awkward that it's really unhandy to become a major player. So nuclear is very expensive, and I don't want to talk even about the waste problem and accidents. Anyway, I leave that to the industry. I cannot tell much about that. But I'm always against stranded assets. And we would create a lot if we changed to e-fuels like methanol and ammonia. There would be a lot of stranded assets in the supply chain. there would be a lot of stranded assets in the vessel population itself. So I would prefer not to do that. Yeah. The production of the fuels is also very, very energy intensive. Yeah. To make it comparable, I have done some number crunching and normalized it to the energy requirements for production of tons of oil equivalents, TOE. So that means we can then compare the energy content of the e-fuels with conventional fossil fuels or with our biofuel. So the production of one TOE of ammonia requires around about 26 megawatt hours. That of methanol, 27.5 megawatt hours. The production of 1 ton of cambio fuel requires 400 kilowatt hours. Kilowatt hours, not megawatt hours. If we include the total energy consumption for everything, collecting the material in the fields, transporting it to the plant, shredding and drying it, we still don't need more than about 2 megawatt hours, or about 8% of the energy of ammonia and methanol. Yeah. And that is really doable. That is doable. We can do that because to demonstrate it more vividly, let's make a back of the envelope calculation of how much money would be required to build the 15 megawatt offshore wind power plants to produce the energy for ammonia to replace 300 million tons of VLSFO. So one single 15 megawatt offshore wind turbine, which is currently the largest available size, commercially available size, operating at an excellent capacity factor of 50%, would be able to produce approximately 65,000 megawatt hours per annum. That is enough to produce 2,500 TOE of ammonia per annum. So to replace 300 million TOE fossil fuel oil, we would need 120,000 15 megawatt wind turbines. Yeah. For comparison, in 2022, 27.7 gigawatt offshore wind turbines were installed, or 1,800 of these 15 megawatt turbines. But 80% of that in China. So we are not looking very good with that. At this pace, it would take until the end of 2080 to the 2080s to install the necessary power supply. Just the power supply, yeah? So the development of new offshore wind power project is in limbo due to inflation and rapidly increasing prices. I just read and quote, a unit of Spain's Iberdrola SA agreed to cancel a contract to sell power from a planned wind farm off the coast of Massachusetts. Danish developer Ørsted lost a bid to provide offshore wind power to Rhode Island, whose main utility said rising costs made the proposal too expensive. Swedish state-owned utility Vattenfall AB scuttled plans for a wind farm off the coast of Britain, citing inflation, and so on. So there's a lot not happening now, yeah? So to really make that work, we would need the green energy. It doesn't make sense to use black or gray hydrogen and then say, okay, we capture it. It's not really working well, as we all know, yeah?
You have to have the carbon neutral energy to make the electricity to create the synthetic or the hydrogen-based fuels. And then you have to build an entire global infrastructure to store, transport, distribute, and onboard these, and re-engineer the entire shipping fleet to burn these.
Yeah, and now the costs, yeah? Look at the costs. Fully installed with concrete or floating base and connection line to the shore, such the price of one 15-megawatt Vestas turbine is estimated about $30 million. This means the costs for just the energy source for the production of e-fuels would be in the range of $3.6 trillion. That is about 18% of the GDP of the US. Yeah, so that is a figure. Yeah. And then you have to add the cost for the electrolyzers and other equipment for transportation, storage, supply infrastructure, and And you may remember that Martin Stopford once estimated that the new vessels would require about 3.4 trillion. We are talking about trillions, yeah? And that is just for the maritime industry. We wouldn't have 1 kilowatt left for EVs, households, or industry. Yeah, that would have come to on top. So I think that scenario is very unlikely. Yeah, the equipment for the production of 300 million tons of MGO with cambio fuels would be in the range of approximately $350 billion. And it is a drop-in fuel, so you don't need any change to the ship engines. You can mix it with fossil fuels. Yeah, you don't have to change the supply chain, and the infrastructure would be also the same. Yeah, so I think this is a real bargain. Yeah, so if we have so much money left, then we can invest a couple of billion dollars in fine-tuning the exhaust gas treatment with, you know, AUS 40 for the NOx. Yes, you get 97% already out now. And there are very good PM 2.5 filters, particulate matter filters. And the problem is it's not mandatory to install them. That's all. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that may change. The IMO seems to be on a bit of a roll for regulating emissions to air these days. So, we talk to a lot of guests on this podcast about the costs of creating a hydrogen-based economy and the relative cost of the relatively lower cost of producing drop-in fuels, especially biofuels. There's, of course, if you want to create synthetic e-fuels that are drop-in, then it's just as expensive as creating methanol or ammonia, or because you've got to create the hydrogen from, you've got to electrolyze the hydrogen, and then you've got to capture the carbon dioxide, you've got to synthesize the two. So there are costs throughout. So, yeah. I mean, I know that the International Energy Agency put a report out, I think in October, saying that most of the growth in oil demand out to what it considered to be peak oil before the end of this decade could be met by biofuels. So there's a lot of momentum behind this feedstock. But I think your project sounds interesting because it becomes carbon negative with the byproduct.
And we are using crop waste. You know, all the other biofuels are using either vegetable oils or used cooking oil. And vegetable oils are not liked very much. The EU is planning certain steps to curtail the imports. And so the used cooking oil is now the darling. The problem is there's not enough. People don't eat enough French fries. Yeah, that's a pretty simple logic. Yeah. And so what's happening at the moment is that people are using fresh vegetable oil and imported to the, for example, through Malta into the EU and declare it as used cooking oil. So there was just an article about ICCE, I think is the organization that wrote that. Yeah. Anyway, there was an article about fraudulent UCO imports into the EU. So that is a consequence. We don't simply have enough feedstock material for biodiesel or HVO. It's very difficult to increase that. And you get, for example, in the US, there are a lot of small refineries who want to switch over to HVO production. So they are starting to plant their own soybeans, yeah? But again, then you come into the land use change and food plate or tank discussions, yeah, again. So I think that is the major advantage that we have. We are preventing field incineration of crop waste and can also use other crop waste that is not incinerated. So we don't have a feedstock problem.
Fascinating stuff. If anybody wants to contact you for more information, or if there's a demonstration available, do you have a website, or is there some way people can get in touch?
Yeah, I would say my website crashed because Adobe terminated the Flash Player, and I had this beautiful website with Fuji, Mount Fuji changing with the seasons and great photos on it, and all of a sudden it was gone. Gone, and I'm at the moment restructuring it. So if people want to see what it looks like, they should use our US website, which is verde-visions.com. Verde is a green, yeah, Verde, verde-visions.com. Yeah. I have also a profile on LinkedIn, so people can just contact me over LinkedIn.
So they should search for Hans Henning Udek on LinkedIn.
Exactly. Yeah.
And are you planning to speak at any events or attend any maritime events in 2024 where people might be able to approach you?
Yeah, I will definitely be again at the Asian Development Bank at the Asian Clean Energy Forum 2024. So that will be one event I would like to go to there. There is a very large shipping event that I would like to take part in, but it's pretty pricey, so I'm still considering that. For the big boys in shipping, it's not a big deal, you know. But we are still a small company, so.
Well, best of luck with it. I hope, you know, and if anybody wants to reach out to Hans Henning, then do so, or you can get in touch with us here. We'll put you in touch with Hans Henning. But thanks ever so much for taking the time to come on. We really appreciate it. It sounds like a fascinating opportunity, and you know, I hope that you're able to develop the project and develop your funding.
Yes, I'm discussing the matter currently with some people, with companies that are doing these evaluation of projects, and that looks very good. I think we are on the right path. Brilliant. Here.
Well, I wish you all the best for the new year, for 2024. And thank you.
Thank you very much. I wish you the same.
Yeah.
Especially health. Health. Yeah. Yeah. Health is important. My grandfather always said, health is not everything, but everything is nothing without health. And he's so true. Yeah.
Well, with those wise words, we'll leave you. We'll leave you to get on with the rest of your evening. Thanks ever so much to Hans Henning. You next.
Okay. Thank you.
Yokohama in Japan. And to the rest of you out there in Listerland, thank you. Thank you so much for tuning in to our podcast. Thanks and bye for now.
Thank you, Mark.